You're listening to KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. And we'd like you to listen in to an interview with Joey Morrison. So, Joey, welcome to Labor Temple. I know you've been here many times before. What sorts of events have you attended at the Labor Temple?
Yeah, I have been here for a number of different, just fun community events like drag shows, and there was a period of pretty consistent Friday night, Saturday night dances that I know folks that were helping to run. And a number of those folks that used to run events here are actually part of my campaign team this time around. So there's a solid amount of lineage connecting us to this place. And I've been a part of, you know, leading trainings here with our local tenants union, and I've been invited here to talk with folks when DSA meets here and things like that. So there's a number of things that have brought me to this beloved spot in Bozeman.
Joey Morrison, how old are you, and what are the many things that you've done for a living?
Yeah, I've spent the majority of the time that I've lived here in Bozeman as a social worker. So while I was going to school here, I would by day spend my time, you know, studying and working in labs and things like that, making sure that I was a really top student. And then at nighttime, largely would pay my bills as a social worker working for the Warming Center or working with organizations like Haven, or volunteering at the Help Center, which I eventually ended up also working for. So that looked like, you know, working with folks experiencing homelessness, working with survivors of domestic and sexual violence, answering our local suicide crisis line. Those are the main things that I have spent my time paying my bills doing in this community. I've done a few other small pieces here and there. I worked for a State Department program that partners with the university years ago. I have worked as a back-of-house prep cook for Hooked Sushi, which was Montana Fish Company. I think more people are kind of familiar with both of those names now. And then this summer, I was working as a market manager for a local farm, Chance Farm, out in kind of the middle of the valley.
Oh, nice. How old are you?
I am 28 years old.
The mayoral candidate that wins will be in office for 4 years.
Yep. Yeah, they served 2 years as the deputy mayor, sort of getting the ropes, getting the position figured out, being effectively just another city commission member. And then the last 2 years of their seat, they are the mayor. Which at the end of the day really has very limited powers and distinctions of any other commission member. We have a weak mayor system here in Bozeman, so the commission is largely just five voting bodies that all have their own pull and value, and the mayor really gets some more ceremonial responsibilities and things like that. But at the end of the day, they're still effectively just another one of the five members of the commission.
What are some of the events that your team is going to host?
Yeah, there's a bunch of pieces that we have coming together that we've been building the infrastructure for the last few months, because, you know, we're 57 days away from the election. It's now starting to occupy the consciousness of more people in the community. So a lot of the legwork that we've been doing since May is really to be able to execute on a lot of these things in the next few months. So there's some just fun things that we have coming up. Like, I will be serving as I'll be delivering a monologue for an upcoming Last Best Comedy show, their Notorious BOZ, which will be really fun and just silly and fun and get to know me and get to know what our campaign is about. A little bit more humanizing time, rather than just talking about policy and talking to people at the doors and things like that. Our goal is to host a number of, somewhere between probably 5 and 15 neighborhood town halls that are hosted by individuals in various neighborhoods to bring them out and talk about what are the issues that matter most to the people in those neighborhoods. At the moment, we're the only campaign that has a field operation, so we're knocking, you know, sometimes somewhere between 700 and 1,000 doors per week. Nobody else is really knocking any doors at the moment in this race. And so those are 6 nights out of the week. It is the reason why I feel really confident when I do come to interviews, or when I come and I talk with folks in the community about what are the things that people are struggling with. At the end of the day, our campaign is actually the only one that's going out and really meaningfully engaging with the biggest slice of the community. The goal is to knock every single door in Bozeman, which is 22,000 doors. With the current pace at which we're picking up volunteers and picking up shifts, we do believe that we're going to hit that number. And that would be the most aggressive field operation that anybody has ever run for municipal candidate in the city of Bozeman. And we're really proud to know that that is central to how we not only win, but we win in the way that we want to. We win in a way that the community feels held and heard and listened to and knows what we need to do to get to work over the next 4 years while I'm in office. It definitely makes it a lot easier to get really ambitious things done when the community comes out and screams and yells and says, yes, we want this. It gives the commission, gives the people in City Hall, and will give me a bit more cover to be really ambitious and give the rest of the commission the courage to get behind what we need to do.
The regulation on the code that protects homeless residents in Bozeman is pending certain change. We've had a regulation that protects those who reside in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. And is this about, this is about the ordinance that the commission is considering right now that
yes.
will be regulations about folks camping in public right of way.
Yes. So we're calling it urban camping.
Yes.
As a city, we've sadly closed down our rest area on mm-hmm. the I-90. Let's see. Why would we close our rest area, and what could we be doing with that space?
Yeah, the rest area is not really on my mind, but I'm happy to talk about that ordinance in particular. It went in front of last week a city board that I used to sit on, the Economic Vitality Board, which oversees issues around diversity, equity, inclusion, and things like belonging, as well as affordable housing and public art. And I did show up, as well as some other leaders in Bozeman Tenants United as well, showed up to give public comment, largely opposing the ordinance. So effectively, for folks that don't know, the ordinance would require folks that are camping in the public right-of-way, which is effectively everybody who's camping, to move their dwelling every 5 days. And if they don't do that, it's a $100 fine for every day, yes. effectively making homelessness cost $36,500 per year to be homeless.
Yeah.
I opposed it largely around, like, no doubt there are things that we need to be doing to make sure that our neighbors experiencing homelessness are safe, that they are in the parts of town that can handle them. But we also need to be making sure that we're meeting them halfway. These are not folks that are coming from somewhere else. A lot of these folks are third and fourth and fifth generation Bozemanites that have lived in this valley for their entire life. And so has their family. This narrative that they've all come from somewhere else is extremely xenophobic, gets very quickly very racist, and it's extremely problematic, and it is not solving this problem. And so that was a big piece of what caused me to oppose this ordinance, was that it puts an undue burden on the folks that are already the most vulnerable people in our community, the people that are struggling really deeply to be able to stay here, but are also core parts of this community. I mean, when I was managing the overnight operations of the warming center, I would tell people in the community, you know, if you drive your car around town, if you ever get your car maintained, if you get your hair cut, if you eat at local restaurants, or shop at local grocery stores, there is no doubt that you have intersected with someone who is living on the street. Like, you have absolutely been served food by someone who is experiencing homelessness. You've had your hair cut by someone experiencing homelessness. You've had your car maintained by someone
who's experiencing homelessness. It's not to say they don't have jobs.
Yeah.
It's a wide range of people.
And the ordinance does not get us any closer to solving the problem. There's a myriad pieces of it that are just bad policy, but also ineffective. We know that the things that help people get back on their feet from experiencing homelessness is having a temporary roof over their head while they can get access to treatment, while they can get access to mental health services that they've needed, while they can get access to medical services that they've needed. And HRDC over the last few years has really built an extremely successful program of prioritizing just that. And it's part of it is called the Housing First model. Another term that we use in the housing world is called rapid rehousing. So it's the idea that when someone gets put into just a temporary house, some apartment or a hotel room or something over their head, it makes it much easier to address all of the other pieces around, you know, addiction or mental health. It makes it a lot easier to be able to actually take meaningful steps toward getting into permanent housing. And there, the last 6 or 7 months that I was there, the amount of success we saw was extremely, extremely heartening, and something that the city absolutely needs to be footing more of the bill for, not penalizing people experiencing homelessness.
Are you aware of the Bozeman Health sub-area plan?
A bit about the developments that are going to go on, mm-hmm. go around near Bozeman Health.
Can we keep it as is? Can we afford to not build any houses? Can the city and those of us who may oppose a residential development on those tracts of land, can we stop it?
It's sort of a leading question. I'm curious what the argument is for why it shouldn't be.
The Bozeman Deaconess Hospital is surrounded by several large tracts of land and a glen area where if there weren't cows, there would be elk. The city of Bozeman is pressuring Bozeman Deaconess to capitalize. How can we incorporate more landscaping, more planning, more pedestrian byway, and not only that, but wildlife crossings on some mm-hmm. of the last tracts of land on the edge of the Rocky Mountains?
I appreciate more of the backstory of like where that question is coming from. I mean, at the end of the day, they are not owned by the city. They are owned by private enterprises, private companies, private organizations. They can largely choose to do whatever they want, and the commission is put in a position of really not being able to negotiate that much if everything that they're doing is completely illegal. So if they wanted to put up, you know, large apartment complexes that are luxury apartments, that would be really bad. That'd be really problematic for our community. But technically, if it's fully legal, there's very limited things that the commission has to be able to stop that. Things that the commission has to be able to try to incorporate, you know, more meaningful green spaces, more water conservation efforts that match our climate action plan and things like that, that the city can lean into. They can say, we have this climate action plan. This is nearing a wetland. This is an important animal thoroughfare. Here are the things we're going to really try to be forceful in our negotiations with. The city can offer what are called departures, which are basically parts of the city code that they're willing to relax that might make it cheaper or more appealing for a developer to do what the city wants to do. We have seen a lot of those pieces come together in the form of what were for a while planned unit developments, but are now planned development zones. Actually, things like the areas near Story Mill are some of the examples of those sorts of departures in collaboration between developers and the city. But those are the things that concern me more than, oh, will we put residential dwellings out there? To me, it's essential that we end up putting some level of residential dwelling in that area. We have Highland can be an expanded thoroughfare that connects to two arterial roads like Keggy and in East Main, and it's just sitting largely going unutilized or being utilized occasionally for agricultural uses. There are certainly ways that we can merge those needs. And there are communities all around the country that do this really well. Some of these ways that we know, well, it's getting a little bit more into water specifically, but there to me is not a zero sum to the conversation about how do we maintain our agricultural spaces? How do we make sure that our communities still maintain the feeling of a rugged, small mountain town with also building the inventory that it keeps all of us living here rather than commuting from Butte and from Whitehall to come and work here. I think those are often discussed as if they're zero sum. They're mutually exclusive pieces. You can only do one or the other. Through deep relationship and collaboration with developers, there are avenues in which we can build that housing that we really need and we deserve, that has beautiful landscaped features, that allows water and allows, you know, our all of our local wildlife to be able to traverse through this area safely. I mean, I live right next to all of those developments in the tree streets, and we have deer in our backyard almost every morning. And it's clear that there is the urban-rural continua is really right at its precipice in those neighborhoods, and they're not built to accommodate those in a responsible way at the moment. But those are things that we know that we can be building for in the future. And some of the ways that we can actually ensure that developers have the incentives to build in that way, and this is one of the things that I'm really excited to do as mayor and be early in the first few years, is budget out and create effectively what would be a climate mitigation department of the city that has staff that specifically their role is to be assessing and winning grants from the EPA. There's currently millions of dollars of grants just sitting there that we could absolutely be applying for and be very competitive to try and attain, so that we could be bargaining more meaningfully with developers to make sure that we are building in the way that we know this community needs to, which is conscious of our climate action goals. It's conscious of our water limited resources. It is conscious of the way in which the normal life of people who live here, which is deeply entrenched in the outdoors and deeply connected to our landscape, that we could build in that way. I worry sometimes the conversation becomes we should just put up a wall around Bozeman and not build anymore, which actually does nothing but gentrify communities and makes the existing homes extremely expensive. It prices out effectively everybody who lives here, but it makes the people who are the long-term people of Bozeman that sometimes feel like, you know, this nobody else deserves to live here. It sometimes makes them feel like that's the right thing to do. And that,
wow. How about putting a wall up around our nature reserves, our national parks? How that has messed up the ecological integrity. You just can't. You can't encapsulate.
Yep.
How can we assure that migration is attainable for animals and humans in Bozeman?
Yeah, I think that's another piece that I do feel like often gets talked about as a zero sum. I think overwhelmingly, whenever I'm not an ecologist, I'm not an expert on the ways in which animals move. I don't think that that's necessarily needed in City Hall, but I think what is needed in City Hall is people who are willing to listen to those experts. And that is something that is extremely natural to me. In any of the years of presentations that I've been to in this community from conservation folks or from folks talking about water or talking about how our wildlife need to be taken care of, none of them ever included humans can't be here. So it's clear that there are experts that believe they are both possible, that we can have really potent and currently very needed infrastructure that maintains and protects the important thoroughfares in which migration paths go cut through this valley and have for, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of years, and have largely been cultivated meaningfully by indigenous communities who've been here for a very, very long time. And we just effectively need to make sure that that is incorporated into our development plans, especially those that are on the edges of Bozeman that interface most meaningfully, most directly with wildlife. But I think one of the most effective ways for us to garner the money to be able to either build affordably or build affordable housing or build housing that people can actually afford to live in is through winning some of these EPA grants. There's a lot of small town grants specifically for places like Bozeman that have comparable cities all across the country winning them every year. And we could be using some of that money to make sure that we're protecting, you know, building wildlife. Oh gosh, what are they called? The overpasses for wildlife that we see in as just a part of the common sense in areas like in the Mission Valley and in the Flathead Valley, like up in northwestern Montana, that is just the norm. You drive underneath animal crossings constantly, and that needs to just be a norm for our valley as well.
Mm-hmm. We need a wildlife overpass over the I-90 and the 191.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you see that as mayor, you might be able to designate more conservation easements?
The city has a decent amount of authority in being able to create and determine districts. Districts are a big way in which the city can say, you know, here's a line on the map that says we will only do things a certain way in that area. Those are things like tax increment finance and urban renewal districts that are like the Northeast neighborhood. It's why we've seen so much development in the Northeast neighborhood and Midtown, like North 7th or middle of 7th. Those are largely through tax increment financing, which is one of the ways that the city has to be able to try to ensure more affordable housing gets built in certain areas, or whatever sort of goals that the city sets for a different district, which could be, you know, a waterfowl conservation district, or some sort of land conservation district. The city already does do a pretty decent job. They could certainly be a bit more courageous in the developments that they say no to. That they say no to on the grounds of this is in a sensitive watershed. We're not going to say yes to this development. And there's other ways that the city can be saying no to developments like that by citing, you know, various other parts of their affordable housing action plans, climate action plans, and things like that to make sure that they're saying no to the developments that don't actually advance the city's goals.
So the district zoning would be the way to establish a wildlife corridor, say.
Those would probably be some of the tools that we would have to use, as well as
a bridge over the
things like bridges would actually have to be successful. They would have to be through really deep partnership with the city and the county. I think those are some of the pieces that I'm most excited about as an organizer. Relationships are the currency with which I already know that is how things get done. The ability to negotiate, to collaborate, to bring people to the table is an extremely critical component of what would actually make a mayor successful versus completely inconsequential. And so when thinking about that, those are the pieces that I am really excited about, because I have relationships with many of the county commissioners right now. I know some of their values. I know some of the things that they would be excited about. And I know pieces like conservation, water, are really high on their list as well. But it really takes a meaningful, deep relationship between the city and county to get some of these most ambitious plans through.
Absolutely. Talking about environmental factors seems to affect almost every other issue, and perhaps that is why it sounds as though I'm asking mostly questions about the environment.
Yeah, I think the part that I wanted to address around the environment is I've spent a lot of time as fighting locally and regionally and at the federal level around conservation efforts, around combating climate change. I cut my teeth as an organizer, organizing locally and nationally with the Sunrise Movement, fighting for things like a Green New Deal. Things like meaningful negotiations with Northwestern Energy to make sure that ratepayers are not just getting consistently screwed And making sure that the city can actually show up meaningfully to negotiate with organizations like Northwestern Energy to make sure that we're meeting our climate action goals. So to me, they are not separate in any way. When we are talking about housing, when we're talking about affordable housing, the most affordable housing and the most sustainable housing is the housing that we already have. And it's really important that we can conserve the spaces that we have in a meaningful way, as well as be able to be really pragmatic about thinking, wow, we are probably beyond the point in which building single family homes is not going to meet our climate action goals. Apartments use considerably less water and considerably less energy than single family homes do. We know that we need to divorce ourselves from mandatory vegetative cover like green grass lawns in every new development. Those are still currently in the city code. So it's pieces like that that are, it's impossible to divorce the sustainability aspect. It's impossible to divorce climate change and climate mitigation from the housing battle. The pieces that I was more trying to pivot away from, I actually never hear anybody talking to me at the doors about wildlife. And so I appreciate that you brought in those questions, because they're not ones that I'm having to think about as often. People at the doors are much more worried about, whoa, it seems like the only way that I can retire is I sell my house, because I can't afford to retire and age in place. People saying, right, I can't afford to raise a family here, so I might as well just move to Three Forks or move to Manhattan or move to Butte. And those are also communities that are struggling because of the offload that Bozeman is doing to some of these communities, where the people are sleeping there, but they quote-unquote live in Bozeman. Their job is in Bozeman. Their lifestyle is in Bozeman. Their friends are in Bozeman. And that has a huge effect on not only housing supply, not only on the community feel of just knowing our neighbors and feeling connected, but it also has a significant amount of adverse health effects on us, on long commutes and sitting in our cars for so long. It contributes to the auto dependence of the city that makes our parking conversations so deeply challenging, because we do need to have parking conversations, because currently we're an extremely auto dependent community, but the only way that we get away from that is actually by not building as much parking infrastructure, because we know that every time we use up parking infrastructure to build another parking spot or parking lot, that could have been housing infrastructure. And then we could have tried to incorporate public transportation rather than more auto-dependent infrastructure. So all that to say, I don't see them as completely separate issues. I've been in some ways disappointed by the way in which sustainability and climate change has been talked about in this election so far. So I'm always excited to talk about the environment, talk about the relationship between conservation. What does conservation mean? And what are the ways in which conservation has in some ways been not a helpful voice in housing conversations?
What about the renovations that are going to need to happen? Where are we going to have our staging grounds for the equipment needed to refurbish some of the building?
There's some successes that the city has already had in addressing some of these things that are not sufficient to the whole problem, but they're an important part of the conversation of being able to show that, yes, we can rebuild or repurpose existing infrastructure, existing buildings to meet the goals of today. Example being, you know, the renovation of the fire station just actually nearby here, right behind us, that is being made into affordable housing. As for me, as a lifelong Montanan, I grew up with the saying of, you know, Montana has two seasons, it has winter and road construction. It is, I think, an unfortunate reality of living in the north, and living in places that have significant winters. There are, of course, ways that we can be better practitioners of things like snow removal and things like that, but I think those are pretty separate issues from road construction and the staging that we'll have to imagine 30 years from now.
Well, I'm here with Joey Morrison conducting an interview to be aired alongside the interviews for the candidates of mayor of Bozeman. Joey, who are you looking to build relationship with?
Yeah, that is one of the things that I'm most excited to do as mayor. To me, it is about what do we do here in Bozeman? What will I be doing here in Bozeman? And what will I be doing outside of Bozeman? I think in many ways, Bozeman has a pretty bad reputation throughout most of Montana. And I think most people in Bozeman are very aware of this, you know, the terms of like Bozangeles and things like that. This idea, I talked with someone at a conference, a housing conference back in March, and they said, Bozeman is next to Montana. Like it's somehow completely distinct. It's like a known, it's a city state within the middle of Montana. And in some ways we deserve that reputation because we are not doing much. There's not much leadership from City Hall to address that. But it does bother me because there are poor and working class people here in Bozeman that are trying to make their families, like support their families and make a living here, just in the same way that there are people in Great Falls or in Billings or in Miles City where I grew up, or Missoula and other cities. But Bozeman has this really bad reputation. To me, it is about us going out and providing leadership and collaboration with other cities and counties, not just in our valley, but also throughout the rest of Montana, because we know that is the only way that Bozeman can have any chance of preserving its ability to manage its municipal needs. Every time the state legislature comes together, they try to take away local control from city governments, and cities like Bozeman and Missoula have just as much to lose as towns like Columbus and Lewistown and Glendive. But we don't bring them all into the negotiating table. And those are pieces that I know I'm deeply excited to talk about. I think those are the only effective ways that we have through organizing our citizens across the state of Montana and organizing our citizens here in Bozeman to go and get their voices heard at the state legislature when things are getting taken away that we know make our community safer, make sure that people can age in place, make sure that our people can afford to live here. The neighborhood town halls that I'm going to be leading as a candidate are no different from the neighborhood town halls that I want to lead as mayor. Talking with folks in the community, making sure that people feel heard and can feel like they can participate in the democratic process through something other than angry threads on Reddit or Next or grumpy letters to the editor that just get relegated into oblivion. Like, those are not meaningful ways for our community to have conversations that are really challenging. Like, how do we manage building units near the hospital? Like, those are conversations that are just largely happening in online forums or between friends. Those aren't happening in the community in a meaningful way. Or what do we do about managing the folks that are living on the streets in this community and experiencing homelessness? Those are not being talked about in a meaningful or well-led, healthy way. And same with really tough conversations that I've been really excited to talk with folks at the doors about density. Density meets our climate action goals. It is an essential component of getting pragmatic and real about the situation that we're at in Bozeman. There is no timeline in which we go back to, you know, Main Street being an uncongested city street. That's not a reality that we'll ever get to.
Do you think that Main Street could ever be just reserved for bicyclists, walkers,
yeah,
motorcycles, but no four-wheeled vehicles?
Yeah, I think that is definitely a possibility. There's no reason to think that can't be. There's walking malls all across the country. There's walking malls within the state of Montana that we get to look at, like, you know, in downtown Helena is a great example. We do have to just be really thoughtful about who gets excluded in those sorts of infrastructure, like folks with disabilities that maybe can't walk or bike long distances, as well as being really intentional about right now, that's a core component of the thoroughfare for trucks to be able to go through the city is a lot of them go out and they go out East Main and things like that. Yeah. That's obviously not set in stone and that doesn't have to be forever. But those are the pieces that are in the back of my mind when we're thinking about what could be a really beautiful way to make downtown Bozeman feel more like its older self, you know, a smaller, less congested residential feel of folks walking and coming and going and being able to find parking and things like that. This idea that all of those conversations should just be had, be led by the city commission only in city commission meetings, that only a very small group of people either can attend or are willing to attend, is not appropriate for the city anymore. We really need to bring the community in. And that's a core component of why I'm running the campaign the way that I'm running it. As in knocking doors and running a grassroots campaign that's building hundreds of volunteers and knocking thousands of doors.
Do we need more community gardens? Do we need to improve the ones we have only?
The pieces around like agricultural like integration into subdivisions is currently going on within the city. I don't know all of the details because a lot of those are being run just by city staff, but I know that there was a presentation to the sustainability board talking about the unified development code audit and amendments that they're going through right now, talking about how do we integrate more urban gardens into communities that aren't just for the extremely affluent, because that is one of the big concerns that I have about how conservation conversations have been had in Bozeman is largely just, you know, let's just put solar panels on every house and put a community garden in every house, and then suddenly it's twice as expensive and actually nobody who lives here can buy that house anymore. But the ability to incorporate community rentable gardens that are just part of a neighborhood that only the folks in that neighborhood have access to is absolutely one of the ways that we know that we'll get to food sovereignty and get closer to making sure people have access to, you know, local produce and things like that to have on their dinner table.
I think community gardens could be established particularly to help the younger generations. How do you feel about coming up with a different term for the one we hear so often, homeless?
I think one of the terms that I and actually a lot of other people in the housing world use is unhoused. I typically just defer to what, you know, I have spent most of my career working with folks experiencing homelessness or experiencing houselessness or working with unhoused folks. I don't think they think about it quite that much. I have seen mostly the debate around homelessness versus houselessness happening amongst people who project a feeling of offense to those words. But I just typically reflect whatever other people are using. So if I'm working with someone who says, you know, Bozeman is my home, I'm not homeless, I'm just, mm-hmm. I don't have a house right now, then I'm going to say, great,
yeah,
you're unhoused. That's how I'm going to refer to this. And so I think that's just, to me, it's just really about being mindful with our language in general, is that we don't have to be perfect about it, but we know that we need to be able to adapt and reflect what other people are saying around us. The thing that disturbs me more than the term homelessness is the ubiquity with which the term urban camping is becoming the norm. That it's like this idea that it's recreational.
I'm glad to hear that you have some linguistic perspective on interacting with the diversity of people.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing here at the Labor Temple. Is there any way that we can reach out to you?
Our website is morrisonforbozeman.com. In closing, like the pieces that I really want to emphasize are the ways in which this campaign is being run that it's really special to me and is the only way that I'd be willing to run a campaign, which is one that is grassroots, that is community-based and community-driven, and that seeks to talk with every single person in this city. In this race, I'm far and beyond the only campaign that's running it in that way. We are out quite literally, 6 days out of the week, talking with folks in our community, talking with folks that are struggling, talking with folks that are doing well, talking with folks that are just concerned about the direction Bozeman is going. And in many ways, this election in November isn't just about, you know, trying to get someone like me into City Hall. It is a referendum on the question of, are we okay with the direction Bozeman is going? And overwhelmingly, I'm hearing people say, no, we are not okay with the direction Bozeman is going, and we need some change. And that is core and central to why I'm running and why I'm running the campaign the way that I'm running it.
Thank you, Joey Morrison. That's your website, Morrison.
For Bozeman.
ForBozeman.com.
Yep.
All righty. That's a wrap.